We're going to talk about domestic abuse in this next conversation. So we want to give you some contact info right up front. If you need help for emergency crisis and intervention resources, you can contact the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-7233. That's 800-799-7233, or visit them online at thehotline.org. We'll give you that info again at the end of the conversation. Since the program's launch in 2003, Wisconsin has averaged 2 Amber Alerts per year. That's the statewide notification system for missing and endangered children. So far this year, there have been 11, and there are more than 9 weeks left in the year. Those 11 make up more than 20% of all Amber Alerts ever issued in the state. Authorities say they don't know what's causing the rise in cases. At least 4 of them involved domestic violence prior to the alert being issued. The State Department of Justice says other states are also reporting more Amber Alerts, but not necessarily connected to domestic abuse. So what's going on? Ashley Lutheran is a crime reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She covers public safety, crime, and policing. Ashley, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
So usually 2 a year, 11 this year. What are some of the reasons, Ashley, that authorities think might be contributing to this rise in Amber Alerts?
Well, as you noted in the introduction, authorities here in Wisconsin are not seeing any definitive trend that is related directly to the increase. However, there have been several cases that are linked to violence against women. And that is something that came up, obviously, here in Milwaukee recently with the case of Mallory and her son, Major Harris. And it's something that domestic violence advocates and those who help survivors note that there is this intersection between child abduction and violence against women.
Now, Amber Alerts, let's take a look at when they are given. It's not just any case where a child goes missing. What are the criteria for issuing this Amber Alert that we might see pop up on our phones and TV screens and on our radios?
So the criteria is very specific. There are three criteria that must be met. The missing person must be a child 17 or younger. The child must be in danger of serious bodily harm or death. And the law enforcement agency issuing the alert must have enough information about the child, the suspect, or the vehicle to believe that an immediate broadcast of that information would help in locating the child.
How effective are Amber Alerts as far as we know?
As far as we know, Amber Alerts are very effective. Most children, according to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, most children who are the subject of an Amber Alert are found within 12 hours of the alert.
We're talking to Ashley Lutheran, crime reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, about a rise this year in Amber Alerts. She also reported on the link with domestic abuse and domestic violence. Ashley, you talked to people who advocate for victims of domestic violence and work to help prevent it. What kind of things did you hear from them about the connection between domestic abuse and abductions of a child?
And I'm sure your next guest expert will be able to address this too, but a lot of them spoke about the connection. We know that domestic abuse and domestic violence really centers on power and control. And unfortunately, children can become one of those pieces of power control that an abuser can use. And oftentimes, people who are in a situation of domestic violence, they may not even be most concerned about their own safety, but rather even more concerned about their child's safety. And so it becomes a really complicated and dangerous dynamic within the home.
And you heard about this connection between Amber Alerts. One of your sources with End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin said, I'm quoting from your piece here, "When my phone goes off with an Amber Alert, I think this is probably involving domestic abuse, but wondering, does the public make that connection?" That connection, though, as you go through case by case, often is there. The domestic abuse is something connected to what we end up seeing as that Amber Alert, right?
Yes. And you can even broaden it out, because more than 60% of Amber Alerts nationwide involve some sort of parental abduction. And so the expert I spoke with from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children pointed out that there has been an increasing trend of Amber Alerts being used in domestic cases. Perhaps there's not documented domestic violence within them, but there is growing movement to use these Amber Alerts, understanding that if a child's with a parent, that may not always mean that they're safe. There may be other custody issues at play, other factors going into it. And that's different from perhaps how law enforcement and others might have, even the public might have viewed that situation in years past.
And Ashley, as we wrap up, what are you watching for when it comes to Amber Alerts and their link with domestic abuse in Wisconsin?
I think it will be really important to see what other factors and what other information is released about the cases that have already been identified this year, and to see if at the end of the year, experts with the DOJ and also those who work to address domestic violence can pull any larger trends from what we've seen this year.
Ashley, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Ashley Lutheran, crime reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where she covers public safety, crime, and policing. We talked with her about a rise in Amber Alerts in Wisconsin this year and their connection in many cases with domestic abuse. Coming up, we'll talk to an advocate for victims of domestic violence about the warning signs of abuse and where people can turn for help. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you experienced domestic abuse in your own life? Is that a story you're willing to share? What would be your advice for someone dealing with that right now? Do you work on this issue, maybe with people who are domestic violence survivors themselves? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. According to the National Domestic Violence Hotline, nearly 20 people are physically abused by an intimate partner in the U.S. every minute. It comes out to more than 10 million people each year. Group also says that in Wisconsin, more than 36% of women and 32% of men will experience intimate partner physical violence or intimate partner rape or partner stalking in their lifetimes. And the last year, a little more than a year, has been particularly difficult. Our next guest says her organization has been serving more people than ever, and that's creating some challenges. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a domestic violence survivor? You can share your story if you're comfortable doing that. What helped you overcome it? What services do you need that maybe weren't there when you needed them? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. Tracy Plowman is the manager of community education and prevention at Harbor House in Appleton. Tracy, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
First of all, can you tell us about the kinds of services you offer at Harbor House?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a loaded question. We actually have a lot. Just like all the other, most of the other domestic violence programs around the state. We have adult advocacy. We are a very large shelter program. We have legal advocacy. We have Black outreach advocate. We have a Hmong outreach advocate. We have Hispanic advocate. And so we kind of help people with, you know, trying to find sustainable income. We try to help them with affordable housing. We do, like I said, have the shelter program. We're open 24 hours a day. We're staffed 24 hours a day. We have a 24-hour crisis line. We help people, like I said, kind of navigate through the legal system. And then we have one-on-one where we work with individuals. We also have a really, really good children's program where we work with kids and adults. I'm sure we also have an outreach program in another county that we cover, and we have a full-time staff out there. We do community education, so I go into the community and I actually train people around the state about domestic violence and domestic violence programs and services. And then we also have somebody that actually goes into the schools from like first grade until 12th grade and does age appropriate education and awareness there.
And I saw local reporting, Tracy, that Harbor House and I imagine other similar organizations around the state, unfortunately saw an increase in demand for a lot of those services, especially as we open back up from the pandemic. What kind of things have you seen there?
Yeah, it was, you know, it was stalled a lot. I mean, we did a lot of video stuff and phone calls and stuff like that, but it was really stalled, you know, and we knew there was trouble because one of the biggest things with domestic violence is isolation. And so you get isolated from your family and your friends and any kind of outlets that you possibly have. And COVID just compounded that. And so nobody, you know, people who were living with domestic violence had no, you know, everybody was home, nobody or working from home. And the kids were home. And so there wasn't the chance to call or to get out of the house and go see an advocate or something like that. And so once everything kind of started opening up, probably early June to mid June, we went from a jump from about mid 20, like 24 people in less than like a week to like 68 or 69 people. And that was in 1 week. And it was right after things started opening up.
And I understand for the shelter part of your services, you rely on donations for a lot of the goods, a lot of the basic necessities you provide. And that stalled too during the pandemic, right?
It did. Yeah. The donation and that's one of the things that hasn't picked up yet since things have opened up. So we have between 70 and 80 people. We're a 68 bed domestic violence shelter, which is, I think, the largest standalone domestic violence shelter in the state. And we're over capacity, well over capacity. And all of our donations that we have or had are now going very, very fast. And people are just, you know, and I don't know the reason behind it, but people are not donating the way they were prior.
Talking to Tracy Plowman with Harbor House in Appleton, community education and prevention manager there, talking about domestic abuse during Domestic Abuse Awareness Month around the country. You can join in with your questions, maybe your experience at 800-642-1234. Tracy, what are the warning signs for someone to start to realize that they're in an abusive relationship?
I think that one of the most important things is understanding that it's not just about physical violence, and the community and people living in it tend to think that it's not that bad because, you know, they haven't been hit or it hasn't become violent, physically violent. And there's a whole lot of things like isolation and manipulation and financial abuse and verbal and emotional abuse and using the kids, you know, against you and there's all different threats and stuff like that. So there's a whole lot of things that happen other than the physical violence, and we just don't recognize it. You know, when you're in a relationship, when every time that there's an altercation, there's yelling, screaming, swearing, calling you names, demeaning you, degrading you, when it turns into those personal attacks, that's a warning sign. And also when you want to do something or you feel strongly about something and you get threats, that's a warning sign. And so, you know, when you're with somebody and they constantly are causing issues between you and your friends or you and your family, causing you to choose them over those people, that's how we end up in isolation. And so that's a red flag.
You mentioned outreach into schools. What kind of work do you do, and maybe what kind of work is needed to make sure that A, people can recognize the signs that they're being abused in a relationship, but also to build a healthy relationship where neither partner is abusive in the first place?
Yeah, we have a full-time staff person that goes into the schools and all the schools, at least, you know, in the Fox Valley, and does age-appropriate awareness, you know. And when they're really young, we start out with bullying and self-esteem and how to be a good ally and how to stay safe at home. You know, one of the main things with kids is we don't want them to get in the middle because they get hurt if they get in the middle. And so we want to make sure that we try to help them with that. And then as we get into, you know, middle school, then we want to start actually talking about dating violence and understanding that it's not about physical violence. It's about somebody who's constantly taking or checking your phone. It's about somebody who has a problem with all your friends. It's about somebody who wants to monopolize all your time and complain, you know, gets upset with you if you don't wear the certain things or act a certain way. And then we go, as we get into high school, and we do talk about healthy relationships. What is a healthy relationship? and kind of the opposite of what the things that I just talked about.
How does the abuse affect victims in the long run if they aren't able to get the help they need?
You know, unfortunately, with domestic violence, it's a generational issue. And so when we're brought up in it, if there's no intervention, we kind of just repeat that behavior. I mean, we kind of all do that. You know, we can say we're not going to be like we're like our parents, but we are a product of the way we're brought up, whether that's culture or faith or whatever. And when there is this kind of really unhealthy relationships and behaviors in the home, that's how we learn to kind of get what we want and show our value, unfortunately. So it follows us, unfortunately, into adulthood. And then we repeat and have those unhealthy behaviors. And then we have children and we just keep the generational cycle going. That is what we do without intervention. But if we get intervention, then we can start to make an impact on stopping the next generation of kids or the next generation of teenagers from having these abusive relationships.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I know this is a very sensitive topic, and I don't want to get personal, you know, with my own life, but I do believe that the churches bear a responsibility to guide people in a more holy life so they don't choose to be violent and they don't drink so much or do drugs or whatever is leading them on this path. I think religious institutions must step up and guide people toward a better path. I think that's part of it.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Do you partner, Tracy, with local faith groups for your outreach?
We do as much as we possibly can. The faith community is one of the communities that we really try to connect with, because especially if you kind of like what the caller said, especially if you are in a kind of community where it's a big thing. You have a lot of people that, you know, go to their faith community and it's a big part of how they seek whatever, you know, their peace. And it's also their first place they go when they're struggling. And so you're right. And we try really hard to talk to people in the faith community so that we can educate them about what it is, what it really is, and how to really help the family. It's not just about the person that is on the receiving end of this. This is about the whole family, because it affects the whole family, and not just their children, but their parents and their siblings, and it affects everybody. And so I agree 100% that the more faith communities we can get involved in helping the family as a whole, the better it would be.
Thanks for that call. I wonder, Tracy, if you have advice for someone who knows someone that's going through abuse. What are the best ways, you think, to support them?
I think the most important thing is to stay consistent and steady in your support. Unfortunately, with domestic violence, because a lot of people don't understand it, and they tend to judge, they tend to judge victims' decisions, and one of them is staying in the relationship. And what people don't understand is that most victims, most family members don't want the relationship to end. They want the abuse to end. And so, and it's important that we support that. The most dangerous time for a victim of domestic violence is when they leave. Now, does that mean I don't want them to? No, of course I do. But the person that knows their partner best and knows what the threats are against their children or whatever the case is best needs to be able to make those decisions when they feel it's right. And the rest of us need to support them. So what I would say is, when you notice something, say something, but say it in a compassionate, supportive way. Like, I care about you. I'm concerned. This is what I've noticed. And is there anything I can do to help? And when they say, no, everything is fine, you take the fine and you say, okay, if you need anything, you let me know. And then you walk away. And then the next time you notice, you say it again. But you don't look at somebody and say, you know what, if you don't leave them, I'm done. I'm out of your life. Because the only person that wins is their abusive partner, because they've isolated them more.
Let's bring on another caller now. Mary is with us in Appleton. Mary, hello.
Hello.
What did you want to tell us about, Mary?
I have volunteered at Harbor House. I just wanted to say they do a fantastic job. And I was a victim of domestic abuse. My abuser is a minister. And I just want people to know that it can happen in all different professions and social stratas.
Mary, thanks for the call and for sharing your story. And yeah, this can happen to people in any walk of life, Tracy.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we do find it in our faith communities. I've literally had clients who had to go to two or three churches so that they could continue to have their support in faith because their abusive partner was allowed to continue to go to the different faith communities and manipulate all the people there. And so I completely understand that. It's the same thing we face when we're talking about a police officer, which we know also is a possibility. And it's very difficult because there's a lot of power. And again, remembering that domestic violence is about power and control. It's not about physical abuse necessarily. It's physical abuse is one tactic that's used, but it's about having power and control over everyone and everything in your life and absolutely mainly your partner.
Mary, thanks for that call. And Tracy, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us today.
You bet. Thank you.
That's Tracy Plowman, Manager of Community Education and Prevention at Harbor House in Appleton. We talked to her about domestic violence and where people can turn for help. If you are experiencing domestic abuse and need help, you can contact the National Domestic Violence Hotline. The number is 800-799-7233. That's 800-799-7233. Or visit online at thehotline.org.